Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 30th, 2015. Residents of Juba and other towns in South Sudan battle with increasing prices of food items.
Well, like these days, the price of goods is high. Yeah, because if dollar is going up, everything will be high. The problem is dollar.
And agriculture experts say dependence syndrome is to blame for the looming food insecurity in South Sudan.
Our farmers in South Sudan, they are not able to settle down and to cultivate. We are more dependent on the neighboring countries. So people are so much used to the food that flows from the neighboring Uganda and Kenya.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese are grappling with higher cost of goods and services across the board. We have several reports for you today, beginning with Jonglei State, where business owners say they are worried about skyrocketing inflation, which is drying up access to hard currency. Traders say 100 US dollars now fetch up to 740 South Sudanese pounds on the black market, and that, they say, is not good for business. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Bor.
Deng Akwe, chief executive officer of the Bor Municipal Council, says most traders base prices on US dollars rat because many goods are imported from neighboring Uganda and Kenya. This forces all traders to obtain hard currency.
The traders, they complain of the dollar is very high. For example, the rate exchange today, they say it is 740 South Sudanese pound. And if you try to reduce some of the prices of your items, then you will be losing. So they have to go according to the dollar rate exchange.
Ali Ahmed, a businessman who used to own a wholesale consumable goods store in Bor Market, says traders usually don't earn much profit under the best of circumstances. But he says prices have increased even more than usual because of South Sudan economic crisis.
Well, like these days, the price of goods is high. Yeah, because if dollar is going up, everything will be high. And the problem is dollar. You cannot get dollar. If you get it, you can get the price, high price. And that price will affect everything because of dollar.
Ahmed says 20 kilograms of rice currently cost 120 South Sudanese pound. 50 kilograms of sugar cost 320 pound. A 50 kg bag of maize flour 180 pound, and 20 liters of cooking oil is 150 pound. A 50 kg of a can of beans goes for a whopping 300 SSP. Ahmed says 2010 50 kg of sugar cost only 95 South Sudanese pound. Daniel Guar Mayans, a customer who bought a 50 kg of sugar at Bor Market today, says he doesn't blame Jonglei State traders. He does point his finger at Jonglei State government officials for keeping quiet about the growing economic crisis.
When I buy something for family, I get the price of this thing is very high. Today I bought sugar, 330 pounds. But last time, the low price is 250 pounds. Okay. But now the price is very high. Now I don't know the solution. The government is the one who will see the solution. How the direction will be down.
Bor Municipal Council CEO Akwei acknowledges the challenges for customers, but says economic policy is very complex and hard to regulate even during the worst of time.
Prices changes is always a government policy. Which cannot be done actually at the lower level, like here in the town, in the municipality. Mm. Unless something is done concerning dollar rate exchange, that I think things may go down. But if the government of South Sudan has not done anything concerning rate exchange of dollar, things may still go up.
Akwi advised both customers and traders to try and be patient about the fluctuating exchange rate until the economic situation improves. Jonglei State Ministry of Finance could not be reached for comment. Last year, the Minister of Local Government established that its traders were able to get access to U.S. dollars and improve transportation throughout South Sudan, market price would reduce significantly. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
As we mentioned, South Sudan's fragile economy is hitting the pockets of traders as their stocks run thin, due in part to a lack of foreign currency, which is needed to import goods. Philip Thorner Liu talked to one owner of a multi-purpose shop in Juba who was forced to reduce the number of his employees due to low sales.
John Manuel is the managing director of Maka Pharmaceutical Drug Store in Juba's Konyokonyo Market. Manuel 4-story building contains a drug store on the ground floor. The second, third and fourth stores are rented out to generate more income. But Manuel says he is worried about the future of his drug store. He says he is not able to refurnish his stock of drugs from neighboring countries because...
First of all, people doesn't have money. Second to that, the availability of hard currencies is becoming a problem. So I find it difficult for me to purchase and even to sell.
Mulal says he needs United States dollars to buy drugs from Uganda and Kenya. He says those dollars are available on the so-called black market at a rate of $1 to 7.3 South Sudanese pounds. He says he cannot afford to purchase the amount he needs. As a result, he says, is that he's not making any profit.
We don't have stock, and people are in need of, and another condition is that even the ordinary people who are buying in good quantity, they are unable also to buy the quantity that they were buying before.
Manuel is one of many South Sudanese traders whose businesses are facing the hardship caused by economic slowdown since fighting began in December 2013. The conflict led to closure of oil fields in Unity State and disrupted the daily oil output in Upper Nile State. South Sudan's economy depends almost exclusively on oil exports to meet its foreign currency needs. It imports nearly all of its goods, including food. Mulal says he fears his pharmacy business may soon collapse.
We are unable now to pay our staff, especially the amount that we were paying them before, because even people who are renting the offices, they have also the same problem. So we have to reduce the rent that they were paying to a smaller margin just to maintain them.
Mulal says for now, he's making the tough decision to stay in business with hopes that the economy will pick up soon. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
Meanwhile, humanitarian agencies have warned that more than 2.5 million people are facing food insecurity across South Sudan following the 15-month-long conflict. Reporting from Opposition Health Territory, VOA's Gabe Joslow explains the dimension of the crisis and how ordinary South Sudanese are coping without getting enough to eat.
The United Nations says more than 260,000 people were killed as a result of the famine that struck areas of Somalia in July 2011. The regional director for the United Nations World Food Program, Valerie Guarnieri, tells VOA that while the warnings were issued months in advance, the response was not enough to avoid catastrophe.
In Somalia, the sense was that while there was some alarm bell ringing that was happening earlier in the year from WFP among them, that the alarm wasn't sounded loud enough and sort of clearly enough to facilitate that kind of response. So the response only came after the famine was declared. And that's really just, it's unconscionable. It's just too late.
A report from Oxfam and Save the Children released in 2012 after the Somalia crisis had subsided said one reason for the slow response was that raising money for humanitarian efforts too often depends on media and public attention to a crisis. The evidence for that is in the data. Figures provided by the United Nations show that donors contributed $342 million to the Somalia appeal in July and August of 2011 after the famine was declared, which is more than the total funding received during the first half of the year. Guarnieri says in the past, it could take up to 3 months to convert funding into food, but that with new planning techniques, the UN has sped that process up to 2 weeks. Still, she says one of the problems is that donors want to see their money in action, like food dropped from an airplane. But by that point, the crisis is already in full swing. It is sometimes hard to convince them to support contingency plans instead.
There's an understanding that a pledge made as a forecast allows us to move faster, but there's also always a desire when you make a contribution to then, after your contribution, see that tangible assistance being delivered on the ground. So we're trying to address what are some sort of donor visibility issues.
Early warning systems take into account some of the expected indicators of crisis: malnutrition, harvests, food availability. But the UN is also working on better predicting political problems to give agencies a jump on potential emergencies. Guarnieri says political mapping is more art than science at this point, but that agencies are using the system to plan for Burundi, where political tensions have been on the rise ahead of elections in June.
We've been working as the UN and supporting the country team to develop a contingency plan for Burundi in the event that the upcoming elections result in displacement or conflict beyond just a sporadic incident. We're working with government as well on that plan, and there's going to be a simulation in the coming weeks where we start to test some of the assumptions of the plan to really see how ready we are.
Despite lessons learned from past emergencies, contingency planning and funding still remains a huge challenge. The most recent data shows that in South Sudan, for instance, where agencies have been warning of the possibility of famine for months, a UN humanitarian appeal for $1.8 billion has received less than 8% of the requested funding. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Nairobi.
And international aid agencies have been sounding the alarm about the worsening humanitarian situation in South Sudan. A top official with the UN's World Food Programme visited the country this month and says if the fighting continues, many families may face food insecurity because there is not enough supplies of food in Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity states. Agricultural experts predict the situation may become worse even during the rainy season when many roads are impassable. Sylvester Kakamisaka is a former consultant with the South Sudan Ministry of Agriculture. He says the situation is complicated. Kaka says farming activities have slowed down in many parts of the country because of the ongoing fighting. He says that threatens the country's food security.
Food security is where there is availability and accessibility and affordability of food for an average citizen to have at least 3 meals to keep him or her healthy.
Kaka has worked on several projects to educate farmers in South Sudan on the importance of creating a variety of crop production that will feed the South Sudanese. As it is, he says, farmers have no incentive to produce abundantly because the country depends on food from neighboring Kenya, Sudan, and Uganda. But he says imported food is very expensive for ordinary citizens.
Food insecurity, this is whereby an average citizen has not access to food. If there is any food in the town, he or she cannot afford it, and he or she will not be able to have at least 2 meals per day.
South Sudan's 21 years of conflict with Sudan destroyed basic infrastructure in the country, including agricultural institutions. Many farmers across the country were either displaced or went into exile because of insecurity. Kaka says the system of dependence created by international agencies have also affected the capacity of farmers to work on their land. He says the instability in the country has helped fuel food crisis.
Our farmers in South Sudan, they are not able to settle down and to cultivate. Apart from that, again, we are more dependent on the neighboring countries. So people are so much used to the food that flows from the neighboring Uganda and Kenya.
The conflict that erupted in December 2013 has paralyzed the activities of farmers in the three states of Jonglei, Upper Nile and Unity states. The United Nations says it is racing to preposition 100,000 metric tons of food around South Sudan ahead of the rainy season, which begins in April. The food will feed around 3 million South Sudanese. Kaka says the economic situation of South Sudan is forcing families in urban areas to become food insecure.
Now, with the devaluation of the currency, the South Sudanese pound against dollar, you can imagine those food brought from Uganda with the tax and all that, the price reaching Juba and other towns has become high. Now, the average man has no accessibility and affordability to the food.
Farming communities from other states in South Sudan face security due to cartel raids and attacks by Ugandan rebels of the Lord's Resistance Army. Some farmers in Western Equatoria State have been displaced by LRA, forcing some to take refuge in Democratic Republic of Congo and Central Africa Republic. Intercommunal attacks in Lake State has also restricted farmers from cultivating. Kaka says that is a typical scenario where farmers are unable to plan for their activities.
For a farmer to have food, he must be settled down and should be able to walk free to get his feed either from neighbors or from relatives from elsewhere. But where you have insecurity in the country, then the movement even of the farmer is threatened. So he cannot get the agricultural input that he needed for his agricultural season. Therefore, he will not be able to have enough food.
South Sudan experienced famine in 1998 during the fighting with Khartoum. What was known as Bahr al-Ghazal region was heavily affected. Thousands of families lost their property, cattle, and loved ones. Tomorrow, we continue to look at food insecurity with a report from Gabe Joslow on families in Unity State who are surviving on leaves to stay alive. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A South Sudanese woman speaks up for other women who says they deserve the same rights as men in South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today
is democracy the political model that every country should adopt? Why or why not?
In as much as democracy is good, it has its own flaws. So if we can have a mix of democracy and some sort of authoritarian, it could help Africa develop faster.
Yes, I think it is necessary that every country should adopt a democratic system of government, because I feel like a democratic society gives power to the people. It's all about giving the people a chance to air out their views on how they think maybe they can develop a particular country.
Not really. It depends on what kind of community it is. For instance, there's some communities that are so religious, and democracy can't be the ideal type of government.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We are still talking about food security in South Sudan. Farmers in Central Equatoria State are complaining that armed cattle keepers from Bor County in Jonglei State are steering thousands of heads of cattle into Juba, Kajukeji, and Lanya counties. Eswaki Simon Wood reports for VOA from Juba. Central Equatoria lawmakers say cattle keepers from Bor have been encroaching on their lands for years.
Central Equatoria state lawmakers and representatives from Lanya and Kajukeji counties told the reporters in Juba on Friday that Bor cattle keepers and their herds have been encroaching on Central Equatoria land since 2011, and it's only gotten worse in recent years. The lawmakers say there is a brewing conflict between the indigenous communities in the counties and the herders. Most of the people in the three Central Equatoria state counties are cultivators who say they cannot live peacefully alongside the herders, especially empty ones. The lawmakers say the cattle herds now number into thousands. Albert Luate Morjan, a member of parliament from Lanya County, says he has been noticing a large number of herders in his county lately.
I myself, I met those people for several times. Those cattle owners, some of them are armed with weapons, for example, Kilansko, and the ammunition are being hanged, carried by the cows, hanged to the cow neck, so that facilitate when they're moving. The area now, if you see, it is completely dry. If the way is worse, they leave a moment. When the grass is growing behind them, they come back.
Morjan says farmers in his community have not yet started cultivating their land ahead of the expected heavy rains because they fear the herds will destroy their crops. He says ongoing peace talks between chiefs and the herders have so far prevented conflict. But he says patience is wearing thin. Dabe Francis, a lawmaker from Kajukeji, says so far there are 18 cattle camps in Kajukeji and there may be more he is not aware of. He says the herders have encroached on two of the five payams of Kajukeji County. Francis says tensions are brewing ahead of what is expected to be a busy few weeks for farmers when they cultivate their crops.
There's a potential risk of conflict that our government, both the national and the state, may not be able to contain in the future. But time has come for us as a government to contain it if we have the will.
Sokiri Stephen is a farmer from Ngepo Payam in Kajukeji. He says the herders have been encroaching on his village for 2 weeks now.
The destruction that they have started, the cassavas and the field that has been cultivated, even the owners of the cattle, they have reached to approve the cassavas.
Stephen says locals worry that fighting will soon break out between herders and farmers.
Yesterday we were in church for prayers, and the same case raised, all the community said that this issue must be handled properly. This issue need to be to the government authority, even to our diocese, so that if they could accept to withdraw their cattle, it is well and good. And if they don't accept, then this one will really be too complex.
Oliver Mule, another lawmaker from Kajukeji, says attempts by the Central Equatoria State Parliament to address the problem have failed.
We have several deliberations in this house. Always implementation of those resolutions were not failed.
South Sudan in Focus is not able to independently confirm the numbers of the cattle being herded into the three counties, but this is not the first time lawmakers have complained about the problem. Over a week ago, Central Equatoria State Governor Clement Wanikonga told the lawmakers that cattle keepers from Bor County have encroached on several parts of his state and that because they are armed, it is creating insecurity. Lawmakers like Imule suspect top government officials may be the owners of the herds. He says they want the government to do one thing.
What we are asking for is very simple. We want these people to evacuate the area and allow our people to farm because it is about their livelihood.
South Sudan in Focus could not confirm whether or not any of the huts in Central Equatoria are owned by top government officials. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
As Women's History Month draws to a close, South Sudan in Focus profiles Lorna James Elia, an activist and mother who is making her voice heard during the country's long struggle toward peace. As the director of the Juba-based NGO Voice for Change, Lorna says she is determined to give South Sudanese women a seat at the table during the peace negotiations and to ensure that women are involved in the building of the country's future. Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
As a young girl growing up in Wharton, Southern Sudan, Lorna James Elia knows how hard life can be for women here. She comes from a family of five children, all of them girls, born in Central Equatoria State. Two brothers and two sisters died at infancy. Elia says that experience had a profound impact on her and her commitment to change the way women are viewed in society.
We were viewed like, you know, you are women and you will be married off. You will not be in a position to continue with the lineage. Alongside that, my mom actually was accused of killing his own sons. But today, because of education, because we are all able to go to schools, people admire us. They will say, look at these five girls. They are more than boys. They can take care of their mother, and you can see they are responsible, and they support themselves.
Elia says she never dreamed that she would one day travel throughout the country, trying to inspire other women to overcome their challenges. And now that has become part of her day-to-day routine, like during a recent public discussion held in Juba about the ongoing peace process. Before a crowd of some 300 people, the 50-year-old stood confidently at the podium, speaking in a clear, confident voice.
And I want to challenge the youth that you youth, you need to take over. I know they don't like you, because when you talk strongly, they will say, wait. You wait. You are not going to wait. We need to see that the next government, that we have youth. At least maybe you guys can inject some change and move beyond tribalism, move beyond tokenism, move beyond favorism.
It was all in a day's work for Elia, who is executive director of Voice for Change, a local NGO that advocates for the rights of women in South Sudan. Elia regularly participates in such forums. She also conducts training seminars to empower women with leadership skills and advocates for their rights before top government officials. She also sat in some of the sessions of the South Sudan Peace Talks in Addis Ababa. Aside from being a women's activist, the mother of four runs a boutique and a consultancy firm called Rising Down, which trains women in leadership skills and evaluates development projects. Before becoming an activist, Elia worked with several organizations, including Norwegian People's Aid, where she helped establish a vocational training center in Yei. As a community development worker, Elia traveled to many parts of then Southern Sudan and saw the hardships women faced. 5 years ago, she gave up a well-paying job at the UN Development Programme, or UNDP, where she was head of the Good Governance and Human Rights Unit, to become a full-time activist.
I felt it's about time for me to come and address some of the issues that affects women on how I can see a change in terms of the issues of girl child, participation of women in political arena at the government level, and also the issue of illiteracy, the high level of literacy among women. This is what prompted me, and I came out to do it with passion.
During negotiations, which led to the signing of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement ending civil war between Southern Sudan and Khartoum, Elia participated in workshops to gather opinions and educate Southern Sudanese about the ongoing peace process.
We went to Geneva to advocate for women's rights and for the inclusion of women and their issues as part of the agreement, and indeed also for the 25%.
In South Sudan, women's challenges are innumerable, from illiteracy and poverty to high maternal mortality rate and domestic violence. Elia admits she sometimes feels overwhelmed, but also says she knows she cannot give up the fight. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Nigeria's Electoral Commission has begun releasing results from the country's presidential election after the United States and Britain warned of a possible attempt to rig the vote count. The commission has announced official vote totals from 8 states in the capital, Abuja. It says President Goodluck Jonathan won 3 states in the federal capital territory, while his challenger, Muhammadu Buhari, won 5 states. U.S. President Barack Obama is planning to visit his ancestral homeland of Kenya in what would be his first visit there as president. White House Deputy Press Secretary Eric Schultz told reporters today that Mr. Obama will go to Kenya at the end of July to attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit. And finally, FBI agents are investigating an incident near the gates of the U.S. National Security Agency near Washington. Authorities report 2 people were injured this morning. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday, and we now leave you with the song Labi Amaro by Mede Muzika. Olena Mari Vonodra Nandero Cecilia Labi Amaro Nimikechi Amaro Atane Morosi Olena Mari Osomuru Jason Gine Desi Oso Ati Amabesi Namururu Limengo Utane Chene Oso Ngawi Mondo lobe na toro fashe Azifu azifu Uni takachina rube Uni takachina rube Jika tetara luku dea Labi amaru Minga kuru Kibikechi amaru Belengwa Waleme amari osomuru nye Kona onene Daniel Paroja Dobe Daniel We have been listening to Mede Muzika and that song, Labia Maro. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Jambo amati agu kotobi. Abandonaru ngakidine ovu sane agu.